Yesterday we brought you through the first seven steps, and actually by the end of the day I was it really kind of hit me, you know. It's always an experience to go in one day, even though we've been over it hundreds of times, you know, to go right from step one right through to step seven, you know, it's mind-boggling to me what can actually happen. You know, and then sharing my experience along with that, you know, it really kind of just puts back into perspective just what happened to me. You know, and what, you know, we'll talk about a spiritual awakening at the end, but that's the kind of feeling I get when I go through this process. It just reminds me, it just fills me with gratitude. Today we're gonna talk about step 8 and 9. And then 10, 11, and 12. And I think what we'll do is Brian's going to go through 8 and 9. And then when we get to 10 and 11, both Brian and I agree that, you know, 10 and 11 get worked together. You can't quite separate them. But I'm going to work on the mechanics of 10, and then Brian will work on the mechanics of 11, whatever you, I think you'll enjoy what we have to say anyway. So, Brian, 8 and 9. Good morning, everybody. Really nice to be here, and it was a very pleasant day for me yesterday, and I really thank everyone for the time and attention that you've given us, and you know, the privilege of letting us share our experience with this this wonderful program with you. We're going to talk, first of all, about steps 8 and 9 today. And step 8 is, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So the directions on these steps start on page 76 is where the directions start, right after step 7. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's now look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. You know, where did that list come from? How could I already have that right now? It says we made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask. One of the things my sponsor pointed out to me when we were going through the directions in this book, he said that whenever we see the words, we ask, that's a prayer. And that's how I look at every phrase in this book that starts with those words, we ask, is a prayer. So it's telling us how to achieve the willingness. We ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed that at the beginning we would go to any length for victory over alcohol. So I have a list. I took inventory already. And it says that that's where my amends list is. Now everyone that was on my list, my inventory, they weren't lucky enough to graduate to my amends list. They stayed just on the inventory. But a fair number that was on my inventory list, enough to satisfy me at any rate, graduated to my amends list. And the criteria is fairly simple. If I had harmed them, they went on my amends list. If I had caused the person harm, they made it to my amends list. A lot of the people that were on my resentment list sometimes didn't even know I existed. The difficulties I had with them all took place in my mind. I may have even been afraid to speak to them or talk to them. Although in some cases what I often did is that I talked badly about them, especially when I saw somebody that I felt had more than I had. I felt they were better looking, stronger, happier, more successful. If someone else had said to me, oh, you know, so-and-so, aren't they nice? I would say, yeah, but, and I would find a little crink in their armor that I felt that I was superior to them in this one category, and I would try and, you know, derail them on one particular point in my conversation with this other person. So in that case, if I had done that to someone else, if I'd spent my time telling poor David here how miserable my friend Greg is, well, I'm not going to go over and make an amend to my friend Greg, because he doesn't know anything about what a miserable person I've been. But the person that I got to go make the amend to is David. And I've got to tell him about my spiritual sickness and my own fears and my own securities that made me do that. So that's sometimes how I take care of some of those people that were on my inventory list that didn't make it to my amends list. I was just talking to somebody just prior to the discussion, prior to us starting today, and they had a question. They said, if something came up from the past today, and they had already done their inventory, but something came up from the past, how would they deal with it? Would it be in the form of a fourth step, or would it be amend or 10-step work? And it made me think a little bit about how I do this process. And you were listening to us yesterday, and I told you about how many people were on my amends list. And some people in the room might think, well, that's crazy. Nobody would want to do that much work. And I don't think that the people that started this program made a list probably quite as long as I made mine. I know that the original manuscript actually said, we make a list, it says, you make a list of people that you are angry at. And then when they printed the book, it became, we made a list of people we were angry at. Now, they were changing that from singular to plural. But what also happened is from present tense to past tense. So I don't really know. I don't have any way of knowing how many people Bill Wilson had on his resentment list. But my real feeling is it wasn't as many as I had. And the question that I had earlier from someone, they talked about something coming up from the past, and I made an analogy of like a fourth grade teacher. You know, if something came up about me and, you know, I remembered all of a sudden I'd done a fourth step or whatever, and then all of a sudden something came up about something in fourth grade. Well, my guess is that Bill may not have had his fourth grade teacher on his resentment list, because if I had started this and somebody said, Brian, I want you to make a list of people you're angry at right now, I may have only had 20, 30 names. I may not have been able to think of any more than that. But when I followed the other instruction that my sponsor gave me that was written in the book, I ended up with quite a few more. And that first instruction probably never, ever would have included my second grade teacher. But the second instruction had her on the list. So what happened on mine is that she was already taken care of in my fourth step. It's already gone, and I don't have to work that out in a tenth. Bill made I had to work that out in a tenth step. So I don't know in the end result if it makes any difference how you do it one way or the other. But for me, I know that when Bill Wilson wrote this book, he was only a few years sober. And I believe in all my heart that he did not write this book alone. That God, without question, inspired the writing of this book. And I have no problem whatsoever with the way I follow the directions in the book. And if someone asked me to be their sponsor, said, will you help me go through this process? I would do it exactly the way it was done with me, by following the directions the way they're written in this book today, because that's the experience that changed my life. And I love the quality of my sobriety today, and what's happened to me as a result of following these directions. And that's the kind of list that I ended up with when I was ready to do this amends list. It says, we've already admitted that we're willing to go make amends to these people, and that's kind of the experience I had in completing the previous steps. In the end of step 7, I'm making a decision now to turn my life and will over to God, you know, to really go to work for him full time. God, I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you will. And now, God, grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. So when I started doing this, I understood this to be definitely the work of God. I did not have, really, when I went through my inventory list and I looked at, went through the list, I took all the names right here written on the inside of my being were all the people I had harmed. It was easy to just, what I did is I just put a highlight through all of their names, the people I had harmed. It only took me 1 millisecond to know when I looked at the name whether I had caused harm and they deserved to be on my amends list. And when I had the amends list done, some of those people had passed away. Some I had absolutely no idea where they'd be today. And some people I knew exactly where they were. And those are the people that I started with first, is the ones that were closest. And for me, and to be honest with you, because I hadn't really completely overcome fear at all, is I started with my mother, because I knew she'd already forgiven me. She thought it was wonderful that I was already sober. She couldn't have been happier with the fact that I've now been sober for 2 years or so. So I knew that she wasn't going to have any problem, that I knew that I was going to be fairly safe making the amend with my mother. So that's where I started. I had a few questions, because I had this inventory, and some of the resentments I had against my mother about certain things she caught me doing when I was young and certain things as growing up. And I'd been pretty descriptive of what those items were on my inventory, and some things I don't know if she knew about or she didn't know about. And I was a little curious about whether or not I should be discussing this with my mother. So I asked. When I'm confused like that, I ask for guidance. And I went to my sponsor, and he advised me. He said no. He told me about the amend with his mother. He was there to make her feel better. He was there to make up for the harm caused in the past. Not to cause more harm, not to do my fifth step with her, but to make up for the harm that I'd caused her. So that relieved me. I kind of knew what it was all about now. I'd grown up in this family with a father who had been an atheist, with a mother who really was not that spiritual. My mother's mother died when she was 15 years old, and she died a horrible death of breast cancer. and bedridden for 2 years before a death, and died when my mother was 15. So I know that an experience like that probably hardened her towards God. And I know that my father grew up with two alcoholic parents and that were separated. And she withdrew him from school, from Catholic school at a young age, because she had a giant resentment against the church. So I knew that his spirituality was lacking too. They sent me to a small church up the street when I was young. And I think they just really wanted me just to get some moral education there. And my brother and I resisted so much that we finally, she finally just gave up and making us go. And somewhere around third grade, we didn't have to go anymore. She just gave up the battle. So when I went to do the amends with my parents, I had learned quite a bit now about myself as a result of this program. I had really analyzed the past. And I knew what I was supposed to do. The first paragraph that we read, it talks about emphasizing the spiritual approach. The whole paragraph here talks about when we want to talk about God. And basically, we do want to talk about God, with one exception. When to do so is going to ruin a future opportunity to talk about God. That's the only time we don't want to do it. And then the other thing that's in here, too, it talks about a little further on. It talks actually, where does it say that? It talks when it starts talking about our creditors. It says, we make no bones about our drinking. So there's a couple of things now as a result of this process that I've got some experience with. One, I know a lot about alcoholism. Two, I know something now about a spiritual experience. So when I sat down with my mother first, and I sat down with each parent individually, I actually turned to the page that holds the 12 steps, page 59. And she knew I'd been sober. She knew I'd been working on a program. And I stopped and I went over each step with her. And I told her about step one. I told her about step two. I told her what that third step decision was all about for me. I told her how thorough my inventory was and what I did with that. And she said, I remember she actually questioned me during that. She said, well, I hope you got rid of that thing. And I hadn't even told her everything in it, but I think our mothers know a lot more than we think they do. So, and I told her about my fifth step and what I had done in step six and seven. And one thing she knew from her own observation, is that Brian was now different. He wasn't the same Brian. He was acting much differently than he had acted before. And what I told her was, that was God. That wasn't Brian. That was God. And then it's up to her to examine the evidence of her own senses, her own observations. And the change that's taken place now in the years since then, you know, I hear her talking about God. My father, the atheist, you know, one morning I'm having breakfast with my parents, and my dad, you know, he mentioned, oh, did you see that Deepak Chopra thing on the public station? And I said, yeah. And I had called up the network and ordered the book. It's, you know, it's just a spiritual discussion if no one's familiar with who he is, an Indian that has some spiritual ideas. And I looked over at my father, and I knew he had ordered the book too. I could just tell by the look in his eye. But he didn't want to tell my mother that he'd spent $60 on a book on Channel 2, or I think she would have killed him. So I didn't mention anything, and he didn't. But I knew he had ordered that same book. So I know through the demonstration of my demonstration, and it tells us that, actually. It says, talks about talking about spiritual things a little further on here. And let's see. Where are we? Over on page 83.
talking about the spiritual thing, and actually this is about the family, some of this discussion here. It says, we should not talk incessantly about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. And I've found that to be true. That's the only way it works. I tried a little preaching. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work at all. And I learned through experience that that's not the way you do it. The way it changes is when something that happens, people get angry, and you don't get angry, and things don't bother you anymore, they look at you and they say, what's going on? How come you don't want to get into this thing and keep this ball rolling? You know, how come you're not participating in this? They know something's different. And that's what the book talks about, is living these spiritual principles. So when I sat and I went through my discussion with my mother, I spent about an hour with her, and I discussed a lot of episodes in the past, and I explained to her how my thinking was inappropriate, how I had thought the wrong way. I took responsibility for my own life. All through my life, you know, whenever I'm an alcoholic, I'm drinking alcoholically, and I'm taking drugs, and I'm not the ideal son, you know. And whenever something would come up, then my parents might say, well, you know, maybe you're an alcoholic because your father was. You know, I wouldn't say, yeah, you're right. But I'd let them believe that. I would let them say, yeah, you know, I just look like, yeah, it is your fault. You know, and I would let them accept that blame, that responsibility, that the reason that I'm alcoholic is because of them. So when I sat down with them after doing this process, I knew that the reason that I'm an alcoholic is me. It's the choices I've made in my life. It's the thoughts that I've had that have made me the alcoholic. It has been my reaction to fear that have made me the alcoholic. So in this talk with my mother, I claimed responsibility for my own actions, the things that I had done, how I had opportunities to sit down and talk with her and discuss things with her, but I wouldn't. I kept them to myself because I'm an alcoholic, because I didn't know how to handle fear, because I had low self-esteem, because I didn't know what to do. I kept them to myself. I made my own decisions about what things meant, and I lived that way. So I owned up for my responsibility for my life. And I told my mother, for one of the really first times in my life, I told her that I loved her. And I kissed her, and I hugged her.
Brian, step 11.
Hi, everybody. Step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Improve my conscious contact with God. That's making an assumption that I've already have conscious contact. And by the time I started practicing step 11, I had made conscious contact with God. And now it's giving me instruction on how to improve this. It says, we shouldn't be shy on the matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. And then Bill says, it would be easy to be vague about this matter. Yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. And I'm very glad that they decided to make some definite and valuable suggestions to me concerning the matter of prayer and meditation. Because I know when I started going to meetings and started listening to people and listening to, especially keying in at some point in time on prayer and meditation, I started to wonder, well, what is meditation? What are we talking about? I had a little bit of an idea about what prayer was, because I knew that I had been saying the third step prayer prior to each time that I worked on my inventory. I knew that I'd been saying the seven step prayer prior to each time I made amends. So I had some ideas about what those prayers consist of, and I had had the opportunity also to consider all of the words in the book that said we ask as prayers, and I knew that what some of those things we were asking for. So I had some ideas about what prayer was, and my prayers were already starting to change a little bit. I remember reading the third step prayer in the book and reading it word for word. And then I can recall in doing my inventory, sometimes I would, it said in the bottom of the third step prayer, it says the wording is optional, as long as we express the idea. So as I went on, I started understanding just a little bit more.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
Some of the, you know, when I first started drinking, first experiences with marijuana and so forth, I pushed him away out of my life. Now, all he thought is, I don't like him. And all I was thinking is, I don't want him to know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Later on, after doing the amend with my brother, I remember talking to him once about my father and saying that when I grew up, I always felt like I couldn't do enough to make my father proud of me. And he said, you know, he said, I never felt that way about Dad. He was always there to comfort me when something went wrong. When my brother left Norwich Academy without finishing it and decided to go to another school instead because it was too rigid for him, he said my father comforted him. He told him it was going to be all right. There was nothing wrong with that. And when he, you know, didn't do well in the soccer game, he comforted him, and he told him that. But he said, Brian, that's the way I felt about you. I never felt like you were proud of me, that you never recognized me or said that you were happy with me. And when he said that, I realized, wow, I really am nuts. You know, here I am. I grew up in the family with, my father's the same guy, but my brother, the non-alcoholic, and me, the alcoholic, see him two different people. And that's when I really, really realized just how in-depth my spiritual sickness is and how I am responsible for my own life. And I could see just how crazy I am. I remember when I did the amend with my brother and I apologized for my behaviors and explained why I had alienated him and talked about this spiritual program in a lot less terms than I did with my parents, because I didn't want to ruin a future opportunity with my brother, because he's very anti this. And I remember the next day I come into my office and I'd ride mountain bikes then, and he had bought me this little thing which was a tire patch kit. And it was on my desk, and I opened this little tire patch kit up, and I read, there's a little handwritten note from him that just said, Bri, awesome amends, love, Pat. I remember going to, in my business, so it talks about going to business rivals and so forth. This guy went to a bitter business rival. It says, sometimes we feel a little diffident about going to people that would work with. I've lost my place here. But it tells us in 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. It says, rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. We make no bones about our drinking. I remember going to this business rival who I had competed against, although we're not competitors and we shouldn't be. I had always felt in conflict with him, and he had always talked badly about me, and I had responded to that call by always talking badly to him about him. And we did this so openly, with we both reported to the same guy, that I knew there was no mistake, that he definitely knew that I'd talked about him before, and I knew I owed this guy an amend. But I was nervous about disclosing my alcoholism, because I'm a responsible individual in this corporation that I represent, and I was nervous about that. I can't tell you I wasn't, but I thought, either God is or he isn't. Either this book has been accurate and true to every damn word so far, or it isn't. So I said, I'm going to trust in God. I feel it in my being. I have to make amends to this guy. So I told him, I said, we were at a trade show one day, and I said, hey, look, I'd like to talk to you. Would you go have lunch with me? And we did. And I sat down, and I talked about my past and how I felt and the kind of principles that I was trying to operate on today and what I was trying to do. And I spoke a little bit about my drinking difficulties and what had brought about this change. And at the end of this discussion, this guy said to me, you know, Brian, he said, I've been wondering lately if I have a drinking problem. Can I talk to you about it? And he started telling me a little bit about how much he drank and wondering whether or not that was some sign of alcoholism. Remember one time I was sitting in an amends meeting, and they were talking about amends. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I don't have any financial amends to make. Because when I actually did my list, when I did the names of the people, I forgot to turn the page and do the institutions and principles. And I had left them off. And all of a sudden, I was thinking to myself, sitting in the meeting and thinking, well, I never really took any money from anybody or did anything in that category. And somebody mentioned something about a car theft. And all of a sudden, I went, oh, Jesus. And I remembered this brand new 1978 CJ7 Jeep that I had, that after having it for a year and then finding myself unemployed, hanging around this bar full of gangsters that I enjoyed, and one of them suggested, that's no problem, I know how to take care of that problem for you. And my Jeep just disappeared one day, and later on I went to the insurance company and told them it had been stolen. You know, I walked out of the mall and it was gone. So here I was faced with this little episode now, and my first thought was to justify and say, well, I paid for the insurance. And I said, well, that's not going to cut it. That's not the spiritual way of life. But then I thought, well, geez, I could get thrown in jail. I could admit this thing, and I could go to jail over it. And then I read this. It says, we'd have to be willing to go to any length. I talked to my sponsor about it. Actually, he happened to be out of town at the time. I talked to another guy that he had sponsored. And he said, well, you know, Brian, you didn't really hurt the insurance company. You hurt the rate payers. And the insurance company isn't going to have any way to deal with that sum of money. And it happened 20 years ago. So I said, yeah, that's a good idea. So I donated $5,000 anonymously to charity. But every time I drove by the Liberty Mutual Insurance Company on my way to the office, I looked at that sign and I knew something was wrong. It still wasn't right. This intuitive thought from God was telling me, no, Brian, this isn't correct. And then I thought about this book, and I was talking to another young man about amends, and I said, well, who are you to be talking about this since you haven't done this yet? And so I marched in there one day, and I went in there, and I stood up to the counter, and I told them what had happened and what I'd done. And that woman behind the counter, she almost collapsed. Her knees gave way. She had to hold on to the counter. She almost fell down. And she said, I have no idea what to do. She said, I'm going to have to go talk to my superior. And she did, and I spent time talking with them, and they knew nothing about how that could be handled. They suggested I talk to another department in there, and I talked to them about it, and they assured me that there was absolutely nothing that can be done, and thanked me for my honesty. Part of them was thanking me for the honesty. The other part was a little pissed off I'd done that. But I know one thing. When I left that office, I knew the door had been closed. It was now water over the dam. I had done my part, I had made my demonstration, and it was done with. And where are we on time? So I think I've covered most of, probably given some examples about what our amends are about or the experiences that I've had. But on each particular amend, no matter what it was, I had said the seven-step prayer. I had asked God to help me. And then during the amends, no matter what they were, and believe me, I've made some unbelievably uncomfortable sexual amends. Thank God I didn't have a chance to talk about sex the other day, and David did. But I've had some frightening things to face in that area. And yeah, we still get a few. I remember being with a guy. I'm with a guy that I'm sponsoring one day. We're in Boston. We were killing a little time after a meeting, and we decided to go into the World Trade Center. There was some side of a show going on. And I walked in there, and we're walking along, and all of a sudden I spot this person that's on my amends list. And I'll tell you, I wanted to dive into the floor. I looked at them, and it was like horror. And I'm with this guy that I'm supposed to be sponsoring and, you know, advising and helping in the program, and I'm ready to run and hide. I did run and hide. I got out of the way and went into another aisle, and we're over there watching some sort of a demonstration in this aisle that we're at, this booth. You know, they're talking about something. I wouldn't have a clue what it was. It was had water and sand in it, and I don't even know what it was because I wasn't even looking at it. Wasn't even listening to it. My mind was on this person in the other booth. And I said to the guy, but he knew something was wrong. Some kid with me, he knows something's wrong. And I said, you know, I saw somebody a few minutes ago, and I said, I've got to go see them for a minute. I said, I'll need a few minutes alone. And he said, I'll catch up with you later. And he says, you have to make an amends, don't you? And I said, yeah. And I went over and I did that, and using tact, common sense, understanding for somebody else's feelings, and I went up and I talked to him for a few minutes. And when I left, we were both very glad that we had run into each other that day. In the past, it disappeared. It was now something of the past. It didn't matter anymore. I was able to look into his eyes. He was able to look into mine. And the past was now gone. We were free. And when I went back to that kid, he could tell that the amends worked. He knew that they happened. It says our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It tells us about the family. We must pray each morning in morning meditation what we should do about these things. And these amends have been an ongoing situation for me with the family. I've found that I have to continue to do these later steps that we'll get into next. I have to continue to do that and continue to do this amend work. That original meeting, all that really did was open the door for me to do the steps of the program in the future, to make myself available to be of maximum service to God and to my fellows. That's my job. I'm working for God. And this is one of the first tasks he had me doing was amends. And I am so, so glad that I have done them. I can walk anywhere today, on any street, go anywhere, and I am not afraid of who I'm going to meet. I've risen above those fears, and my faith in God has increased because of these steps. Doing the very thing that I never wanted to do in my life was admit my wrongs. I have found that's the very thing I want to do in my life today, is admit my wrongs. Because the bottom line is I just want to feel good. And these amends were very healing and very powerful for me. And David, do you want to?
Thanks, Brian. That was real nice. As Brian just mentioned just a moment ago, he talked about how now we're working for God. That's part of what some people will break down the steps into, you know, up to step seven, we're dealing and trying to get rid of the past, you know, that blockage from God. And really by seven, you know, we are feeling a contact and a confidence and a spiritual state of mind. And so I like you mentioned that at the end, you know, we are working for God now. You know, and we're going out with this new confidence, these new spiritual tools, and the first thing we're going to do is go out to the world. Now, this is the first time we're taking any kind of spiritual program out of our little writing cubicle and our meetings with our sponsor. You know, I mean, we do try and practice this stuff, you know, when we start to learn about it, but this is where we're making that demonstration with God and the people that were in our lives or the people that are still in our lives. So this is like starting the new life with nine. We're going to clean up the past. And 10 and 11 and 12, you know, when I first started in on this process, I didn't understand what an inventory was to begin with. And I didn't know how to take one. I didn't know anything about them. So when I got to this point, you know, at the end of the ninth step, which probably everybody's familiar with, are the promises. And I always heard them at meetings, and they sounded real nice, and I just couldn't believe how any of them could come true in my life. The main thing I always wanted in my life was I just wanted a little peace. I wanted peace of mind. I didn't know why I didn't have it. I didn't know that it was possible. I really thought, like the book says, that my alcoholic life was the only one I knew. And so from my perspective, that was not a possible thing to have any of these promises. But at the end of the promises, you know what it says to us? It says, are these extravagant promises? It says, we think not. And that's their experience. Because they are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And we've got to work for them. You know, at the beginning of the ninth step, we are painstaking about this phase of our development. This is now our new spiritual life, working with people in the world for our future. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. You know, as soon as I started making amends, there was a big change in who I was. And so as soon as I felt that and then remembered what it said, things were different. But it's telling us that, you know, you might get some good feelings here, but, you know, you got to work. You got a lot of work ahead of you. And of course, I didn't like that, you know. I didn't want to have to do anything. I wanted what I wanted, and I learned that in my inventory. I wanted what I wanted, and I wanted it now. Didn't want to have to work for it. But by this time, it wasn't as much of a chore as it was when I first started in on this process. You know, it wasn't so much of a burden in my life to actually look at myself. So when I got to step 10, it says we continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admit it. That's very vague and seemed rather simple, so it was confusing for me. But it starts by saying this thought brings us to step 10. And that thought is, of course, the working for the promises to come true. It says this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and to continue to set right any mistakes as we go along. So, our personal inventory. You know, what are we doing in a personal inventory? In the fourth step, we broke it down to resentments, fear, and sex conduct. I don't know that the specific, we'll get into the directions, but I don't know that we need to go back and, you know, write out everything and fill in the, you know, to see where everything connects like we did in our inventory. You know, in our inventory, we were really looking for the things in ourselves that were blocking us from God. By the time we get to this point, it's like the evil and corroding thread in the fear. You know, where did we set the ball rolling? You know, there are so many times when, for example, a fear of what somebody will think of me when I do an estimate. I'm a self-employed carpenter. You know, would stop me from even doing the estimate. Because I already had the fear of what they were going to think of me when I did the estimate. It's going to be too high, too low. That's the beginning of the fear. But then what happens when I don't get the estimate back to them for a week? Now there's a new fear coming up. And then, you know, so the point here is that we don't need to, if we continue to do this, we don't build up that kind of stuff. This kind of inventory is that the wording in the 11th step says, as we go through our day, we pause when agitated or doubtful. One of the things that you'll hear both of us talk about is step 10 and 11, they have to go together. I will talk about more of the mechanics of step 10. You know, go through what do the directions say, and I need to connect step 11, because if step 10 are the mechanics, the actual what do I do to take an inventory, I can't do that. I discovered that in the beginning part of this process that I lack the power to do it. So step 11 is my power to continue to take my inventory. And then I can't keep that connection with God and improve my conscious contact in 11 if I'm not continuing to take inventory. They tie together. You know, we have to work them together. You know, I suspect there are people that can go through this process and then just try and do an inventory without improving their conscious contact. One of the stories in the book, Jim, you know, he failed to enlarge. He said he made a good beginning. So maybe he made it up to this point. But, you know, maybe this is where he stopped. Maybe he just thought he had the knowledge. And the emphasis is that we have to remember that it's not us. It's God that is guiding us. God that is giving us the strength to do all of this new stuff. You know, I didn't know Brian before, you know, meeting him at a meeting. But, you know, it sure doesn't sound like he had the power to do those things before. And so I would be kidding myself, and I would again be living in a delusion if I were to believe that all of a sudden I can start doing these things now. So when I take an inventory, it's very important to understand that I'm not doing this on my own. I can't do it on my own. You know, I don't do this perfect. And so, therefore, sometimes self-will can take over again. And what do? I suffer. But I haven't really suffered that long. But, you know, I kept doing what I was supposed to do, and it kept getting better and easier. And that was only through my improving my conscious contact with God. Let's continue on with the directions. I mean, there's so many specific words in this step 10. Luckily, it's a short reading, and you just pack it all into a short reading. It says, we continue to make any mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we clean up the past. Okay, so we just went through that. You know, we started to see how, you know, we were going to identify our mistakes. First, we had to be willing. Then we needed to be open-minded to learn and to be shown. And with enough honesty, I got to this point. So I began this way of living. And as you've heard, like Brian said, some sponsors will have the sponsee start reading step 10 and 11 way back in step 4. So you can start to identify what it is you're going to be doing in the future. There's some pretty blunt statements, and one of them is the next statement, which I thought I was already there. But it says, we have entered the world of the Spirit. You know, I said to myself, I thought I was already there back in step 4. Now, I don't think Bill meant to put anybody down and say, you know, okay, well, whatever you were thinking was wrong and all that. It's just, I think he's just trying to emphasize, you know, all right, you're here. You know, you've got a choice. You see the truth. You know it. You can't deny it. You've got a choice. And that's what these directions in this inventory are about. We don't have to do this stuff. But, you know, Brian loves his life. If he really wants to keep that life, he's got to do certain things. There's a few certain rules that we have to follow. And step 10's a rule. After entering the world of the Spirit, and this is my favorite line, and I think the line I think of the most in the big book is, it says, our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And that's my job from here on in. I didn't get to this point knowing everything about myself. I didn't get to this point being able to do everything with great skill. But if I keep that thought in mind, that I'm not supposed to do these things perfectly, and every time I come up upon something, one of these things that we will list, I'm supposed to do the best I can. I'm supposed to ask God, let's get into those directions now. It says, our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. The first direction says we continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. One thing to notice about that is that, and I made this mistake for a long time, is that I immediately threw that into the category of the resentment turnaround, which was selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, and fear. And so what I was doing was I was leaving out really in that first, that one thought, the other aspects of the other manifestations of self in the fourth step inventory. I just think that, and there's no statement why he did this, but I think it's that one statement there is supposed to encompass all three of them. So this is what we're going to look for. We by now definitely know what selfishness is. We know what our dishonesties are. We can very quickly identify our resentment and have really begun to understand how fear is the motivating factor of all of it. It says when these crop up. It doesn't say if they're going to crop up. You know, he told the story about George, you know, and thinking that he was cured, you know, and he was not going to do these things, not cured, but he wasn't going to do these things when he got out at, you know, his fifth and sixth and seventh step and getting in the men's. And you know, first thing that happened was this lustful situation. You know, this is the point he keeps making when he tells that story, is that, you know, maybe he missed that. Maybe they weren't supposed to crop up. But their experience, and now mine for years, has been when they crop up. Now, God gave me self-will. God gave me a brain to use. If God wanted me perfect in seven, he would have taken them all away. I don't know what God's plan is. I know what God's plan is for me today. So, it says, when these crop up. Now we have specific directions as to what they do when we find them. A simple example is, let's say, one of the big fears that I always had was I would walk into a room and somebody would glance over at me. And I would immediately get that fear that, you know, it's either they just thought bad about me, you know, or, well, that's basically it. You know, somehow they thought bad about me, and it, my self-esteem just hit the floor. And what did I do? Immediately started to get, you know, think bad about them. You know, it's like those teachers I had on the list, you know. Right from the start, I had no idea what they were thinking, but I started thinking bad about them, caused a problem in our relationship. The point is that when I walk into a room, today it's a whole different situation. A lot of this stuff, it doesn't even pop up unless I've given some reason to, there may be a signal by that, but I walk into a room now, or let's say when I began this, and I would look over and that person would look at me and that fear would come up. See, instead of letting it get past the point of, well, in the beginning it probably would have got the self-seeking and I might have enjoyed, you know, fuming in it a little bit. I've gotten better at it, and that's what I'm supposed to do. But, you know, I would immediately ask God to remove it. Here's our first direction. What I've gotten the habit of is I just close my eyes for a moment, and I ask God to remove that fear. Second direction is we discuss them with someone immediately. Something simple, right from the beginning in a simple matter like that, I didn't need to. I mean, I saw the truth right away. I was just working on applying my newfound power to the situation, you know, and God would remove it. But there were a lot of times when I didn't see exactly what the problem was, and the resentment wouldn't go away. Even though I'd ask God to remove it, something would keep festering, and I wouldn't see it. Maybe a justified resentment. Maybe that person just, I walked into the room and the person just snapped at me. Well, today I could see, you know, I'm better at saying, well, perhaps that person is spiritually sick and I can just accept the situation the way it was. In the beginning, you know, that might have been festering on, so I would need to talk with somebody about that. If we need to talk with somebody, we talk with somebody. We make amends quickly if we've harmed anybody. You know, if the person looked over at me, gave me a look like this, and I just started, you know, I gave him some vulgar comment, you know. You know, after I asked God, you know, and asked for the truth, and the truth comes, and I don't know what he's thinking, and I realize what I've done, I need to go make amends to that person. And these are very simple, but there can be more dramatic things in our lives, you know, that we need to go make amends for quickly. The last direction is we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. In a way, I don't know, it doesn't really talk about it in these terms. You know, we could ask ourselves, so when we get to step 12, what is it we're practicing these principles? You know, Bill says the 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in nature. The way I look at it is that in step, when these crop up, let's say, at once we ask God at once to remove them. We could consider this our continuing spiritual defect removal. You know, that was the ongoing thing I talked about in 7. When they're ready to be removed, God will remove them. We discuss them with somebody immediately. We did that in step five. Even though that's the past, we're trying to apply these principles to our present life. We make amends quickly. Step nine. We resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Step 12. It's a very nice, simple way to realize. The other thing about we ask God to remove them at once is also included in step 11. In that first direction, this is how step 11 for me ties into step 10. As I'm going through my day, I use step 11 for other aspects of my day, but when something crops up in my inventory, and I ask God to remove it, the line in the 11th step says, as we go through our day, when agitated or doubtful, we pause and ask for the right thought or action. So this all kind of goes on. And when I first started in on my 10 steps, this started really when I started to learn about taking an inventory to begin with, but I wasn't real good at this. So I had to kind of keep this all straight in my head, as I was going out. And sometimes it would be real quick, like the fear when I walked into the room. Sometimes it would be rather complex. That's where I may need to talk with somebody. But as I got better with this immediate contact with God, the one other thing in the 10th step, the 11th step on this is, that it says these will become more and more on an intuitive level. And that's what happens. So many things that... That's why the line, our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. So you start to see it apply, that when we first go out into the world and start trying to practice this stuff, I don't know anybody that's real good at it. But the first time we run across something, doesn't matter how we deal with it. We deal with it, we in our 10th step, we review it at night in our 11th, and the next time we run into a similar situation, we're a little better at it. My opinion is this is the way God is teaching me all of my spiritual principles. This is why I understand they're going to become more automatic. I'm going to understand them better, and I'm going to become more effective at applying them in my life. That's why that line is my favorite. After the directions, and then we go out and help somebody. Over and over, Bill will say, that helping an alcoholic is the number one thing. When all else fails, helping an alcoholic and the sex part in here, and in 12th step, he talks all about it. Right after that last direction, the last line in that paragraph, love and tolerance of others is our code. I've never been in the military, but I've heard people describe with great emotion what the code of certain military forces is, and that helped me to understand just what that statement means. I also started to understand I don't have to like everybody, but I have to love everybody. See, I started to understand that when I tried to understand this code. It goes along also with the angry man's prayer. If I can accept somebody as a spiritually sick person, wow, I don't have to hate them anymore. Doesn't mean they're a bad person. I made them a bad person. There's a lot going on for me to understand, and this is all part of my spiritual growth. Next paragraph, it says, we have ceased fighting everything and everyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. Again, the problem is the insanity. It does not exist for us. We are not cocky, nor we are afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. It is easy to let up in the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Well, at the beginning of that reading, you know, tells us we've been restored to sanity. Now, I didn't understand this about this process. You know, I thought, turn my life and will over the care of God because I was nuts and that was going to be it. And he was going to run the show from here on in. Well, now what it's telling me is, you know, God did remove that sanity. And but it's also telling me at the end of that, it says, yeah, that sanity's been removed, but you can always put it back in place. If I don't, we're headed for trouble. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. That's my responsibility. You know, God's not going to maintain my spiritual condition. So I'm granted a daily reprieve contingent upon that. So right now I've understood that sanity has been returned. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. That's exactly how I maintain my spiritual conditioning. Part of the inventory is part of that process. How best can I serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along these lines all we want. It is the proper use of the will. Again, third step's gone. I get my will back. Because I've learned how to use it now. I don't need to keep turning it over every day. What I need to do is ask God in the morning, what is his directions for me? That is using my willpower properly. As long as I use my willpower along God's lines, I can use it all I want. I will let Brian, we're going to take a break, and then Brian's going to, as I did, tie it right back into 11. So, about 10 minutes, if we could. Thanks. Yeah, Brian, it's up 11.
Hi, everybody. Step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Improve my conscious contact with God. That's making an assumption that I've already have conscious contact. And by the time I started practicing step 11, I had made conscious contact with God. And now it's giving me instruction on how to improve this. It says we shouldn't be shy on the matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. And then Bill says it would be easy to be vague about this matter. Yet, we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. And I'm very glad that they decided to make some definite and valuable suggestions to me concerning the matter of prayer and meditation. Because I know when I started going to meetings and started listening to people and listening to, especially keying in at some point in time on prayer and meditation, I started to wonder, well, what is meditation? What are we talking about? I had a little bit of an idea about what prayer was, because I knew that I had been saying the third step prayer prior to each time that I worked on my inventory. I knew that I'd been saying the seven step prayer prior to each time I made amends. So I had some ideas about what those prayers consist of. And I had had the opportunity also to consider all of the words in the book that said, we ask as prayers. And I knew that what some of those things we were asking for. So I had some ideas about what prayer was, and my prayers were already starting to change a little bit. I remember reading the third step prayer in the book and reading it word for word. And then I can recall in doing my inventory, sometimes I would, it said in the bottom of the third step prayer, it says the wording is optional, as long as we express the idea.